This December, O2 and Boiler Room are bringing down the barriers to the music industry. Together with Go Think Big. Go behind the scenes with a series of interactive workshops, learning from the experts. Workshop graduates also have the opportunity to help us produce and host two live broadcast gigs. One at O2 Academy Brixton and one at O2 Academy Leeds. To find out more and get involved, visit gothinkbig.co.uk now.
Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 780. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. Welcoming back to the show a return guest, a gentleman who was last on the show in the spring of 2011. I speak, of course, of wrestler turned wrestling commentator turned actor turned governor of Minnesota turned actor slash activist. That's a very diverse resume right there. I think we would all agree. Jesse Ventura, once known as The Body, who has since expanded his resume to include all the aforementioned categories there. Specifically, we have a copy of his most recent book, Jesse Ventura's Marijuana Manifesto, which he co-wrote with Jen Hobbs, forward by Steve Covey. We're going to be speaking to him primarily about this book, additionally getting his thoughts on the present political landscape in America, which did experience something of an earthquake a week ago, when somebody who ran as big of an outsider as he was managed to secure the presidency. So we have to get his thoughts about that, because it is certainly going to affect drug policy going forward, which is, of course, the focus of this book. But I see we have our guest joining us on the lines. So to reset, everyone, welcome to mini episode number 780 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. We have with us an author today who had such previous resume tags before this point in time as wrestler slash wrestling commentator. Side note, by the way, I think most people would probably agree that when you're looking at the bad guy commentators, probably he and Bobby Heenan were probably the greatest of all time. Subsequently, an actor, where he served in Predator with another future governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, as I say, governor of Minnesota. Subsequently, now author, activist, I guess that would probably best sum up his present roles. And again, he is presently activating for legalization of marijuana, and I'm holding in my hands a copy of his book, and I appreciate the publishing house having sent this out. Jesse Ventura's Marijuana Manifesto. He's going to be on to speak about that today and where it fits into the present political landscape in America, which, as we found out about a week or so ago, continues to be ever-shifting, sometimes in some very strange ways. But for all of that and much, much more, we're glad to welcome back to the show a guest that we had on previously in the spring of 2011, Jesse Ventura. Jesse, welcome back to the show, sir. How are you today?
Hi, Rick. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. How are you, sir?
I'm hanging in there, just getting older. I went on Medicare this year.
Well, that's always a real milestone when people experience that. How many more years till Medicare is covering medical marijuana, do you think?
I have no idea, but I got the card in the mail, and I kind of stuck it in my wallet, and I hope that I don't have to pull it out for about 15 years.
Yeah, well, that's something you can depend on, unlike a union card in pro wrestling, but we won't talk about those kind of bad experiences of the past here. But I do want to get your thoughts. I mean, this is very, very timely, and I know that you have made some comments recently here on finding some similarities, seeing how Donald Trump leveraged some of what you did in your campaign for governor of Minnesota in 1998, and perhaps a little bit of the pro wrestling shtick as well, since that's something that he'd been around for two WrestleManias as a host, one WrestleMania as a participant. But I want to get your thoughts on Trump, some similarities that you see to what you've done and what you stand for, and some key differences.
Well, the first major difference is that I'm a true independent. He ran in the Republican Party and thus became a Republican. So mm-hmm. when you're getting Donald Trump now, you're getting Donald Trump Republican. When you got Jesse Ventura, you got Jesse Ventura complete independent, no one pulling his strings, didn't take any PAC money, only spent $300,000, and didn't spend any of my own money to get elected. And so there are vast differences between Donald and I. I actually related more to the Bernie Sanders run, I think, because I was taking $50 donations, no PAC money, and all of that, and calling for campaign finance reform way back in 98, screaming for it when I ran because I saw how unfair it is. And, you know, but I will say this, when Trump first echoed that the elections are rigged, he's correct. They truly are, and in multiple ways. First of all, we now have our second president who's been elected, and the opponent got more votes, which right. I think that's absurd. In no other elections in this country can you get the most votes and lose, except in president. And now we had it in 2000 when Al Gore got 500,000 more votes than George Bush did, and Hillary Clinton actually ended up getting more of the popular vote than Donald Trump did. And I love that people are protesting, because a lot of it has to do with that. There's a movement now to abolish the Electoral College. I've been for that for decades. Get rid of this thing. It's ridiculous that we don't elect our president like we elect our mayor, like we elect our governor, like we elect our senator or congressperson, you know. And but what Trump and I do have alike, probably a great deal, is that I never used a prepared speech when I ran. He seemed to shoot from the hip and say anything he felt. I don't think I quite offended the amount of people he did. I didn't get into going after particular races or particular genders and all that stuff when I ran for governor. I hit them on controversial things. Like, I remember way back then, I talked about the legalization of drugs, and I talked about the legalization of prostitution. Two things that absolutely exist in our society, but we keep prohibiting them, and we keep keeping them on the prohibition chart, which is stupid in a free society. Things should be dealt with like adults, not prohibit things, because when you prohibit things, they don't go away. They're just ran by criminals from that point on. And so Trump and I had our similarities, and Bernie and I had our similarities, but the big difference was I still remain a complete independent. Both of them now, to me, Bernie's a Democrat and Trump's a Republican, and my war has always been against both political parties. When I ran for governor, I didn't even say my opponents' names usually. I said their parties and ran against their parties and will continue to do so.
Well, of course, in the federal election here, once we got through the primaries, once it got to November, of course, you were behind Gary Johnson and his candidacy, as he stands for a lot of the same things that you do in terms of the cannabis.
I actually changed, though. I actually voted for Jill Stein.
Jill Stein, okay. Well,
yeah,
let me explain.
Sure. I endorsed Gary initially. And then as the campaign wore on, I realized that Dr. Stein gave me my three major check marks of the three things that were most important to me, and Gary only hit on two of those three, and I'll explain.
Okay.
My most important thing was getting out of the Middle Eastern wars. I want them to end. I want our kids brought home and end this fiasco of war over there that apparently is going to go on forever. Second most, I wanted to end the war on drugs. It's a miserable failure. It is time to treat drugs medically, not criminally, like we've sought to do so, and it's time to do it like adults now. And number three is climate change. I'm a firm believer that it's true, because it's a simple scientific fact that the more carbon that there is in the air, that means you get higher temperatures. That can't be disputed. It's a scientific fact. And right now, through the Earth itself and us, there's more carbon in the air than ever before. And I think it, 10, 15, 30 years from now, who knows what the results of this could be. So those were my three main topics. Dr. Stein hit, if we put it to bowling, she struck out in the 10th frame. Gary Johnson got 2 out of 3 strikes. I ended up voting for Dr. Stein.
Okay, well, I can see a lot of similarities between what she ran on and what you have stood for, so that makes sense to me from your perspective. In terms of new chief executive officer for the United States here, again, a long and winding road between you and Mr. Trump, going back to hearing the commentary at WrestleMania 4 and you talking about how Trump was a big fan of yours. I got a kick out of that when I heard that again recently. But as far as what's going to happen from here, as we start to segue into your book, Marijuana Manifesto, there was some talk during the campaign and some of the later stages here that if certain guys have their say, whether it be Giuliani, whether it be Chris Christie, that the government may move back in the direction of not so much respecting the state's 10th Amendment rights, like California, which just now legalized recreational marijuana, has long had medical marijuana. All the states out there that are basically sort of doing their own thing on this. Some talk about the Trump administration potentially going after them. That would seem like it would be difficult to be feasible under the circumstances, as much as people have sort of adjusted their lives to this out there and the economies and everything else.
What it would also be is this. That would be going against the direct will of the people who have voted. They have voted on this issue. That would be sticking it to the very country of what we're supposed to be, and that's people voting. Now, they also have talked about putting Supreme Court justices on that will overturn Roe v. Wade, which, of course, is the woman's right to her body and her right to choose to have a child. And they claim there they wanted to give it and allow states to determine it on their own. So why the hypocrisy? If they're going to attempt to overturn Roe v. Wade and make it a state issue, why would they then do the opposite with marijuana and make it a federal issue when it's being overturned right now by all the states and being legalized? I think that would be the stupidest thing the Trump people could possibly do. He stood up there and told us he's going to represent us, not special interest. He's going to be a man of the people. Well, the people are voting. And they're voting overwhelmingly. And all the polls state that, now it's up to almost 60% of people in the United States believe marijuana should be fully legalized, which it should be. They talk about jobs. It's jobs waiting to happen. The latest to come out of Colorado, 18,000 new jobs in the marijuana industry. Not just growing pot, but what the whole thing is about. 18,000. Plus the boost to Colorado's economy as a whole, $2.4 billion. And this was right in the Wall Street Journal. So you're looking... take a look out there, and okay, you've got tobacco, which is legal and kills you. You've got alcohol, which is legal and can kill you. You got marijuana, which cannot kill you. You cannot overdose marijuana, and you cannot die from it directly. And yet, that's illegal. Well, think of the jobs. How many jobs are out there in the tobacco industry? Hundreds of thousands. How many are out there in the alcohol industry? Probably millions. Marijuana industry will do the same thing. It will employ people, give people jobs, get our economy rolling, and then maybe we can take care of some of our infrastructure in our own country, which they claim they're going to do now. I'd like to see that and continue to fight these wars, how that's going to happen, but that remains to be seen.
Well, when you're talking about the alcohol and the tobacco industries, that sort of segues to one of the big themes of your book, which was very interesting, which was big business trying to sort of hedge itself on both sides of this. You've got Big Pharma, which on the one side has set itself up in opposition to legalized marijuana because of basically cutting in on the action or a fear of that, so to speak. But I'm coming at you from the great state of Ohio, where we had a ballot initiative that you wrote about in the book there, where there was an attempted corporatization, essentially, of the legalization movement of marijuana, and it went down in Ohio fairly resoundingly. But you've got big business, on the other hand, another adjunct of it, basically, trying to get in on the action here. And one would think that's something that we're going to see in more and more places as this gets to be legalized more so across the country. I would think would be big business trying to get their paws on it and try to kind of exclude everybody else.
Well, certainly that attempt will take place, because here's the deal. If the government could charge you and tax you for the air you breathe, so the big problem with marijuana and true legalization is this: poor people would have access to it, you could grow it in your backyard, and you'd never have to pay anyone nothing to use it once you got a crop going. And much the same as when I grew up in South Minneapolis, we had a small backyard, and my mom grew rhubarb and tomatoes every summer, so that we would have rhubarb and tomatoes in our small backyard. Well, you could do the same thing with marijuana, which would allow poor people to have access to it. Well, the government doesn't want you to have anything without them getting a cut of the action. And that's one of the big hiding points that they don't like to talk about, is that there would be a sense of freedom then, which, of course, then you could use marijuana, which means you might not have to deal with big pharma because you're growing it on your own if you desire to. Now, most people wouldn't do that. Most people, just like alcohol, you can brew your own in your house legally, but most people just go out to the store and purchase what they want, which is exactly what would end up with marijuana for the most part. But it would still leave that channel open for people who didn't have money, or for people who wanted to do it organically and on their own, would be able to do it and not have to pay anyone. And that's really the big sticking point here. The government doesn't want you getting anything for free.
Yes, that pretty much applies across the board in all areas of life, I think. But you wrote a good amount, as I said, about the long arm of big business, as it were, essentially, on a couple different sides of the issue. Some of the other stuff that you addressed in the book related to the history of this issue. In one of your footnotes there, I noted that you cited, or at least as a reference point, probably the most similar segment we ever did on this show was we had on Ryan Grimm. His book, I believe it was This Is Your Country on Drugs, which was a historical thing. And his was more based, I think, on hard drugs. But he got into a lot of the same issues as far as things that we don't know about what used to be the case in, say, 19th century America, and how much essentially some of these drugs were in the mainstream of America, which we sort of have a hard time thinking about today. So I want to ask you is that one of the things that surprises people the most when you talk to them about this?
Oh, unbelievable. It surprised me. Doing the research on marijuana was such an eye-opening experience over the fact we've been lied to again. Another big, bold lie in our history books that we're not told about, because all of this stuff came to me doing the research, the great majority of it. And I sat back and I thought, wait a minute, how come I never learned about this in school? I mean, let me give the best example. If George Washington and Thomas Jefferson were alive today, they'd probably be doing 10 to 12 years in federal prison, having been raided by the DEA, and they would be prosecuted as major drug dealers for massive amounts of marijuana that they raised and sold. They would be major drug dealers. Now, does anyone else see what's wrong with that picture besides me? And point being, then I discover that marijuana was actually the driving economic force of this country for its first literally almost 150 years of existence. That back in the days of the colonies, you could actually trade it in lieu of money to the British, and that the British ordered us to grow it. And that, and in Washington's diary, he talked about one year he was so angry because he allowed his plants to cross-pollinate. So they even knew then about the male and the female plant and the differences between two, and were growing both. Now, when you look at it, and in fact, it was the major crop of the South until the invention of the cotton gin. And when the mechanized invention of the cotton gin, that allowed cotton to overtake marijuana because of the way you could quickly harvest it then and get it ready for the marketplace and sell it. But marijuana was used in so many things, and today it's a medical plant. When they tell you that we need more research, that's another big lie, because we have a university in Israel that we fund that's all they do. And they've come out already. You won't read about it a great deal because they don't like to publicize it again, that marijuana would help post-traumatic stress, our soldiers coming home from these immoral wars they're fighting. It would help in the National Football League in the head trauma. The head doctor over there, I forget his name off the top of my head, but he's already stated this. It would help head trauma in the NFL. It's also, read the intro to my book by Mr. Steve Cubby. Here was a guy who was given a 5-year death sentence. He had non-operable adrenal cancer. That was 35 years ago. Marijuana's kept him alive. And I won't go into how the DEA raided his home, put him in prison for legally growing 14 plants in Colorado to keep himself alive. But that's all part of the story he writes in the intro. But here's marijuana curing certain types of cancer. Now, nothing else out there is accomplishing what this tremendous natural organic plant. And for all the religious people out there, let me just state this. If you're religious and you believe in God, then you believe God made everything. Well, that means God then made marijuana, didn't he?
Well, that's an interesting conundrum to pose to people.
Well, how dare us, if you're religious, how dare us destroy something and not use something God made for us? And he didn't make it for us. He didn't make it for us so people could go to prison. And there's the next thing. You got corporate-run prisons that need to be full, so they fill them up with marijuana smokers federally so the corporations can meet their bottom line with stockbrokers or their shareholders, and which require the prisons to be full. And then it leads to this labor you have in prison now. You got an entire workforce in prison with no rights. They're like sweatshops, and corporations are subcorporating them out to other corporations to do their labor for them to put their products on the market. That should be against the law.
Well, there's another aspect of big business right there with that aspect, and you have identified and anticipated what I was going to ask you about next year. You started to get into it a little bit about the medicinal properties that you have identified in your book here, which is interesting to me because, again, a number of states out there, California until this most recent election in November, had been medicinal marijuana, have now gone ahead to recreational marijuana. So it's a patchwork across the country in terms of states that are allowing this, what they're allowing. So I thought it was very, very interesting that you are arguing for full-blown legalization, full stop, you don't need a reason, et cetera. That's your position. And yet you spent a good part of the book enumerating a lot about the medical side of this as well. So even though you're not arguing for a more limited medical exemption for people, talk about that and the decision to devote as much space as you did to that side of it.
Well, the point, you know, it's really strange. Right now in Colorado, you can go to Colorado and you can buy, quote, euphoric marijuana or the recreational marijuana, but you need a prescription to get medical marijuana. Now,
I didn't know that.
I don't get that. I don't, like in Big, when Tom Hanks goes, I don't get it, I don't get it. I don't get
it.
Yeah,
that's...
How is it you can buy it for recreational, the euphoric high in Colorado, but yet you have to go to a doctor, be a resident of Colorado, to get a prescription? You know, see what got me going. Let me explain something. What got me so focused on this is that marijuana has given me my quality of life back completely.
Okay.
And because of it, I'm now working for full legalization. because there's other people out there that are suffering. There's other people out there that have lost their quality of life, and marijuana may be the very catalyst that can give it back to them. And I'll explain further. Someone, it isn't me directly, but someone very close to me developed an epileptic seizure disorder, and this person was seizing four times a week. Well, I was dealing directly with those seizures, and anyone will tell you if they've ever dealt with seizures, it's a feeling of helplessness. There isn't much you can freaking do except make sure the person doesn't get hurt or hurt themselves and try to get them to come out of it. Well, this person went on four different pharmaceutical medications by our doctors over a period of 2 years. None of them worked. They all had horrible side effects, different side effects. And in desperation, we took the person to Colorado. We managed to get medical marijuana, the drops under the tongue, three times a day. Doesn't even make you high. The seizures immediately stopped. This person has now been weaned off all pharmaceutical medication. The seizures have not happened for over 2 years now, and all because of marijuana. And now in Minnesota, fortunately, it comes in pill form. The person can get it in the morning and evening and remain seizure-free. But here's the problem. What costs $30 a month in Colorado costs $600 a month in Minnesota.
Wow.
And that's because Minnesota's medical marijuana laws are so restrictive that only certain people, and this person qualifies, only certain people qualify to use it. So therefore, the people that produce it need to make money, and they have to charge exorbitant prices in which to recoup their money back. Because not enough people are allowed to use the product. And here's what also happens in Minnesota. You can't find a doctor to write the prescription for you. You should see the collusion on that. And obviously that must come from Big Pharma. This person had to go travel 35 miles, had to forsake personal doctors who wouldn't do it, and drive 30 miles to a clinic that would, in which to stop the seizures.
Wow, that's a lot of hoops to jump through, but what's good to hear
now do you understand why I'm so motivated on this?
Right, that why you're talking about that side of the issue as much. But, yeah, that was why I wanted to kind of draw you out on that a little bit because, again, you're not just favoring it for medicinal purposes but across the board. But at the same time, you were clearly wanting to underline all the medical benefits that you saw in it.
Well, let's put it to you this way. I dedicated the book to my friend Tommy Chong, and Tommy told me, Tommy said there should be no difference between medical and recreational marijuana, and here's why. Even though there is in the ingredients in it. But here's why. The people that smoke it for the euphoric feeling are doing it for mental health. The people, and that is also medical, mental health. I would rather have someone smoking pot than taking Prozac. And if marijuana will do that, then it's also, if the euphoric marijuana will keep people from smoking or taking Prozac, I'm all for it. By the way, you know that Prozac's in your entire United States water supply from the government, don't you?
Right. I've seen some things about that recently, about some of the pharmaceuticals.
No, it's called fluoride. It's called fluoride.
Right.
They put, they've been putting fluoride in our water since the 50s. Fluoride is the major ingredient to Prozac. Do you know who put fluoride in the water first? The Nazis were the first to put fluoride in water. And then we started it in the 50s. And they make you. Brainerd, Minnesota, a couple decades ago, Brainerd, Minnesota didn't want fluoride. Their city voted not to have it, and the federal government came in and made them put it in.
Yeah, that's not, and that's, not
and
a.
That's the major ingredient to Prozac.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I did not know that part. And I thought where you were going initially was about some of the pharmaceuticals that are in the water because of passing through from body waste. I'd read about that recently. I thought that's where you were going.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You don't have to go to that. You can go to your own government putting fluoride in your water. What is it in there for? Why? Our teeth? Come on. Your parents should tell you how to brush your teeth and use fluoridated mouthwash. You shouldn't put it in clean drinking water.
Yes, ostensibly it's always been for dental health and hygiene, but as you say, there are other angles to it as well. But I just like to ask you about on this issue, Jesse, to sort of go full circle with your life and your career vis-a-vis this issue. One would think, you know, for all the benefits that you're touting here, as you look at the industry where you first became famous. Of course, you can't really go around taking it in the pro wrestling business unless you're Rob Van Dam, and even he has only been sort of fleetingly in the business over the last several years. But I would guess that you would probably advocate and say that for the performers that are out taking the bumps, as it were, night after night after night on the road, I would guess that you would be an advocate of them being able to partake of this as well.
Absolutely, because the doctors in Israel have stated that it would help brain trauma in the National Football League. Well, there's also brain trauma in the world of pro wrestling. Was it the Dynamite Kid? When the Dynamite Kid or that killed his wife and all that because of concussion issues?
Benoit, the Dynamite Kid, was a hero.
Chris Benoit, excuse me. Excuse me very much to Dynamite. I got confused there. Chris Benoit,
sure.
There's a classic example of someone who may be able to have been helped by marijuana because he had concussion issues without any doubt.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of that is the style, too, that he partook in over the years. But, no, I understand. If you're ever going to confuse two people in the world, I would think it would be Dynamite Kid and Chris Benoit, as much as he emulated him at every step of the way and wanted to be like him. And, unfortunately, Dynamite ended up living to tell the tale but ended up kind of broken down. Chris Benoit was not so lucky, unfortunately. But, yeah, it would be very, very interesting to see what would happen if some of these guys were able to partake of this and what would be the effects on their lifestyle. But in the interim, again, you have put out the Marijuana Manifesto, a very enlightening read. Again, I certainly learned some things as I was reading the book, and I'm sure everybody else out there would as well. Anything that we didn't get to with the book that you feel was important, Jesse, or anything else going on that you'd like to talk about?
No, not really. Just that I'll just finish off by stating that if the wall gets built at Mexico, I'm getting out of here because I don't want to live in East Berlin, and I'll move permanently to my house in Mexico.
Okay.
That's how strongly I feel about that. You know, to me, building a wall, Ronald Reagan was the icon of the modern-day Republican Party, and Ronald Reagan's most famous quote, I believe, was, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." And now the United States is going to build one? We're going to turn into East Berlin? Are you kidding me? Well, when that happens, I'll just tell everybody, remember, walls can keep you in as well as keep others out. And I will be going over the wall the opposite. I'll go over the wall the opposite way. And I'll go down and live in Mexico. I've been living there now for the winters for 10 years. I'm very comfortable down there, and if the wall gets built, Jesse Ventura will move there permanently.
All right, well, we'll wait to see if that happens. And again, yeah, interestingly enough about Ronald Reagan, the immigration policy that he is most famous for is the 1986 mass amnesty that happened. So when you talk about Reagan, it really sort of does go against that.
It goes completely against it, so you can see that when the Republicans throw Ronald Reagan up as their big icon, obviously that's a fraud and a lie because they're certainly not following him. Anyway, that's it for me. I got to go eat dinner.
Yes. Jesse, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Best of luck with the book. Enjoyed having you back on the show. We'd love to do it again, but thank you so much for your time.
All right, thank you. Keep up the good work. See you. Talk to you again.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You very much.
Appreciate it, Jesse. Thanks for the conversation. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today for FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 780.